I'm Benjamin Wittes, and this is the Lawfare Podcast.
Shorts.
March 18th, 2019. We have something special for you on the podcast today, something very different. The Mueller report is coming. We all know that. We don't know what's going to be in it. We don't know when it's showing up. But Bob Mueller has already told a remarkable story. He's told it scattered through different court filings in a variety of cases, indictments, plea agreements, stipulations of fact. We decided to distill it, to organize it, to put it all in one place, to tell the story of the Russia investigation orally, to let a remarkable group of speakers speak the speaking indictments Bob Mueller has issued. So here it is, folks. The story of the Russia conspiracy distilled to a brief audio book in 7 chapters. What you're about to hear is all taken nearly verbatim from actual Bob Mueller filings. We have cut a lot, we have moved some stuff around, and we've changed a few words here and there to make the flow work, to make it sound more like a narrative. We have changed the meaning, not at all. It's the Lawfare Podcast.
Shorts.
Speaking Indictments by Bob Mueller. Chapter 1, read by me. In or around 2016, the Russian Federation operated a military intelligence agency called the Main Intelligence Directorate of the General Staff, the GRU. The GRU had multiple units engaged in cyber operations that involved the staged release of documents stolen through computer intrusions. These units conducted large-scale cyber operations to interfere with the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Starting in at least March 2016, the conspirators used a variety of means to hack the email accounts of volunteers and employees of the U.S. presidential campaign of Hillary Clinton, including the email account of Clinton's campaign chairman. The conspirators also hacked into the computer networks of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee and the Democratic National Committee. The conspirators covertly monitored the computers of dozens of DCCC and DNC employees, implanted hundreds of files containing malicious computer code, and stole emails and other documents. By in or around April 2016, the conspirators began to plan the release of materials stolen from the Clinton campaign, DCCC, and DNC. Beginning in or around June 2016, the conspirators staged and released tens of thousands of the stolen emails and documents. They did so using fictitious online personas, including DC Leaks and Guccifer 2. The conspirators also used the Guccifer 2 persona to release additional stolen documents through a website maintained by an organization, Organization 1, that had previously posted documents stolen from U.S. persons, entities, and the U.S. government. The conspirators continued their U.S. election interference operations through in or around November 2016. Chapter 2, read by Tomas Ilves, President of Estonia, 2006 to 2016.
The Internet Research Agency is a Russian organization engaged in operations to interfere with elections and political processes. Beginning as early as 2014, the IRA began operations to interfere with the U.S. political system, including the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Posing as U.S. persons and creating false U.S. personas, it operated social media pages and groups designed to attract U.S. audiences. These groups and pages, which addressed divisive U.S. political and social issues, falsely claimed to be controlled by U.S. activists. Defendants also used the stolen identities of real U.S. persons to post on IRA-controlled social media accounts. Over time, these social media accounts became defendants' means to reach significant numbers of Americans for purposes of interfering with the U.S. political system, including the presidential election of 2016. Certain defendants traveled to the United States under false pretenses for the purpose of collecting intelligence to inform defendants' operations. Defendants also procured and used computer infrastructure based partly in the United States to hide the Russian origin of their activities and to avoid detection by U.S. regulators and law enforcement. The IRA had a strategic goal to sow discord in the U.S. political system, including the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Defendants posted derogatory information about a number of candidates, and by early to mid-2016, defendants' operations included supporting the presidential campaign of then-candidate Donald J. Trump and disparaging Hillary Clinton. Defendants made various expenditures to carry out those activities, including buying political advertisements on social media in the names of U.S. persons and entities. Defendants also staged political rallies inside the United States, and while posing as U.S. grassroots entities and U.S. persons, and without revealing their Russian identities and IRA affiliation, solicited and compensated real U.S. persons to promote or disparage candidates. Some defendants, posing as U.S. persons and without revealing their Russian association, communicated with unwitting individuals associated with the Trump campaign and with other political activists to coordinate political activities.
Chapter 3, read by Charlie Sykes, host of the Bulwark Podcast.
On or about April 26, 2016, George Papadopoulos met an overseas professor for breakfast at a London hotel. During this meeting, the professor told Papadopoulos that he had just returned from a trip to Moscow, where he had met with high-level Russian government officials. The professor told Papadopoulos that on that trip, he learned that the Russians had dirt on then-candidate Clinton. The professor told defendant Papadopoulos that the Russians have dirt on her, the Russians had emails of Clinton, they have thousands of emails. Papadopoulos, who served as a foreign policy advisor for the Trump campaign, made material false statements and material omissions during an interview with the Federal Bureau of Investigation that took place on January 27, 2017. At the time of the interview, the FBI had an open investigation into the Russian government's efforts to interfere in the 2016 presidential election, including the nature of any links between individuals associated with the campaign and the Russian government, and whether there was any coordination between the campaign and Russia's efforts. Papadopoulos claimed that his interactions with the overseas professor, who Papadopoulos understood to have substantial connections to Russian government officials, occurred before Papadopoulos became a foreign policy advisor to the campaign. Papadopoulos acknowledged that the professor had told him about the Russians possessing dirt on then-candidate Hillary Clinton in the form of thousands of emails, but stated multiple times that he learned that information prior to joining the campaign. In truth and in fact, however, Papadopoulos learned that he would be an advisor to the campaign in early March, and met the professor on or about March 14, 2016. The professor only took interest in defendant Papadopoulos because of his status with the campaign, and the professor told defendant Papadopoulos about the thousands of emails on or about April 26, 2016, when defendant Papadopoulos had been a foreign policy advisor to the Trump campaign for over a month. Papadopoulos understood that the professor had substantial connections to Russian government officials and had met with some of those officials in Moscow immediately prior to telling defendant Papadopoulos about the thousands of emails. Over a period of months, Papadopoulos repeatedly sought to use the professor's Russian connections in an effort to arrange a meeting between the campaign and Russian government officials.
Chapter 4, read by David Criss, Assistant Attorney General for the National Security Division, 2009 through 2011.
Roger Jason Stone Jr. was an official on the U.S. presidential campaign of Donald J. Trump until in or around August 2015. He maintained regular contact with and publicly supported the Trump campaign through the 2016 election. During the summer of 2016, Stone spoke to senior Trump campaign officials about Organization One and information it might have had that would be damaging to the Clinton campaign. Stone was contacted by senior Trump campaign officials to inquire about future releases by Organization One. By in or around early August 2016, Stone was claiming, both publicly and privately, to have communicated with Organization One. By in or around mid-August 2016, Organization One made a public statement denying direct communication with Stone. Thereafter, Stone said that his communication with Organization One had occurred through a person Stone described as a mutual friend, go-between, and intermediary. Stone also continued to communicate with members of the Trump campaign about Organization One and its intended future releases. In or around October 2016, Stone made statements about Organization One's future releases. Stone wrote to a supporter involved with the Trump campaign, quote, "Spoke to my friend in London last night. The payload is still coming." On or about October 3rd, 2016, Stone received an email from a reporter who had connections to a high-ranking Trump campaign official that asked, quote, "The head of Organization One, what's he got? Hope it's good." Stone responded in part, quote, "It is. I'd tell the high-ranking Trump campaign official, but he doesn't call me back." On or about October 7, 2016, Organization One released the first set of emails stolen from the Clinton campaign chairman. Shortly after Organization One's release, an associate of the high-ranking Trump campaign official sent a text message to Stone that read, quote, "Well done." After the 2016 U.S. presidential election, the U.S. House of Representatives Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, the U.S. Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, and the FBI opened or announced their respective investigations into Russian interference in the 2016 U.S. presidential election, which included investigating Stone's claims of contact with Organization One. In response, Stone took steps to obstruct these investigations. Among other steps to obstruct the investigations, Stone made multiple false statements to HPSI about his interactions regarding Organization One and falsely denied possessing records that contained evidence of these interactions. And he attempted to persuade a witness to provide false testimony to and withhold pertinent information from the investigations.
Chapter 5, read by Alina Polyakova, Brookings Fellow, Disinformation Expert, born Kiev, Ukraine.
Paul J. Manafort Jr. and Richard W. Gates III served for years as political consultants and lobbyists. Between at least 2006 and 2015, Manafort and Gates acted as unregistered agents of a foreign government and foreign political parties. Specifically, they represented the government of Ukraine, the president of Ukraine, Viktor Yanukovych, the Party of Regions, a Ukrainian political party led by Yanukovych, and the opposition bloc, a successor to the Party of Regions after Yanukovych fled to Russia. Manafort and Gates generated tens of millions of dollars in income as a result of their Ukraine work. From approximately 2006 through the present, Manafort and Gates engaged in a scheme to hide income from the United States authorities, while enjoying the use of the money. During the first part of the scheme, between approximately 2006 and 2015, Manafort, with Gates' assistance, failed to pay taxes on this income by disguising it as alleged quote-unquote loans from nominee offshore corporate entities and by making millions of dollars in unreported payments from foreign accounts to bank accounts they controlled and United States vendors. Manafort also used the offshore accounts to purchase United States real estate. And Manafort and Gates used the undisclosed income to make improvements to and refinance their United States properties. In the second part of the scheme, between approximately 2015 and at least January 2017, when the Ukraine income dwindled after Yanukovych fled to Russia, Manafort, with the assistance of Gates, extracted money from Manafort's United States real estate by, among other things, using those properties as collateral to obtain loans from multiple financial institutions. Manafort and Gates funneled millions of dollars in payments into numerous foreign nominee companies and bank accounts, opened by them in their accomplices in nominee names and in various foreign countries, including Cyprus, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, and the Seychelles. In total, more than $75 million flowed through the offshore accounts. Manafort, with the assistance of Gates, laundered more than $30 million income that he concealed from the United States Department of the Treasury, the Department of Justice, and others. Gates obtained more than $3 million from the offshore accounts, income that he too concealed from the Treasury, the Department of Justice, and others. Because Manafort, among other things, participated in a campaign to lobby United States officials on behalf of the government of Ukraine, he was required by law to report to the United States his work and fees. Manafort did not do so. Instead, when the Justice Department sent inquiries to Manafort and Gates in 2016 about their activities, Manafort and Gates responded with a series of false and misleading statements.
Chapter 6, read by Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony Award-winning recording artist John Legend.
Michael Cohen was an attorney and employee of a Manhattan-based real estate company. Cohen held the title of executive vice president and special counsel to the owner of the company. Individual 1. On or about August 28, 2017, Cohen caused a 2-page letter to be sent on his behalf to the congressional committees. The letter addressed his efforts at the company to pursue a branded property in Moscow, the Moscow Project. In the letter, Cohen knowingly and deliberately made false representations. On or about October 25, 2017, Cohen gave testimony to SSCI, which included testimony about the Moscow Project, consistent with his prepared remarks and his 2-page statement. In truth and in fact, and as Cohen well knew, Cohen's representations about the Moscow Project were false and misleading. Cohen made the false statements to 1, minimize links between the Moscow Project and Individual 1, and 2, give the false impression that the Moscow Project ended before the Iowa caucus and the very first primary, in hopes of limiting the ongoing Russia investigations. Cohen attempted to conceal or minimize through his false statements the following facts. The Moscow Project was discussed multiple times within the company and did not end in January 2016. Instead, as late as approximately June 2016, Cohen and Individual 2 discussed efforts to obtain Russian governmental approval for the Moscow Project. Cohen discussed the status and progress of the Moscow Project with Individual 1 on more than the 3 occasions Cohen claimed to the committee, and he briefed family members of Individual 1 within the company about the project. Cohen agreed to travel to Russia in connection with the Moscow Project and took steps in contemplation of Individual 1's possible travel to Russia. Cohen asked Individual 1 about the possibility of Individual 1 traveling to Russia in connection with the Moscow Project and asked a senior campaign official about potential business travel to Russia.
Chapter 7, read by Rachel Maddow of, well, The Rachel Maddow Show.
Michael T. Flynn, who served as a surrogate national security advisor for the presidential campaign of Donald J. Trump, as a senior member of President-elect Trump's transition team, and as the national security advisor to President Trump, made materially false statements and omissions during an interview with the Federal Bureau of Investigation on January 24, 2017, in Washington, D.C. On or about December 28, 2016, the Russian ambassador contacted Flynn. On or about December 29th, 2016, Flynn called a senior official of the presidential transition team, who was with other senior members of the presidential transition team at the Mar-a-Lago Resort in Palm Beach, Florida, to discuss what, if anything, to communicate to the Russian ambassador about the U.S. sanctions. On that call, Flynn and the transition official discussed the U.S. sanctions, including the potential impact of those sanctions on the incoming administration's foreign policy goals. The transition official and Flynn also discussed that the members of the presidential transition team at Mar-a-Lago did not want Russia to escalate the situation. Immediately after this phone call with the transition official, Flynn called the Russian ambassador and requested that Russia not escalate the situation and only respond to the U.S. sanctions in a reciprocal manner. Shortly after his phone call with the Russian ambassador, Flynn spoke with the transition official to report on the substance of his call with the Russian ambassador, including their discussion of the U.S. sanctions. On or about December 30th, 2016, Russian President Vladimir Putin released a statement indicating that Russia would not take retaliatory measures in response to the U.S. sanctions at that time. The Russian ambassador called Flynn and informed him that Russia had chosen not to retaliate in response to Flynn's request. After his phone call with the Russian ambassador, Flynn spoke with senior members of the presidential transition team about Flynn's conversations with the Russian ambassador regarding the U.S. sanctions and Russia's decision not to escalate the situation. On or about January 24th, 2017, Flynn agreed to be interviewed by agents from the FBI. During the interview, Flynn falsely stated that he did not ask Russia's ambassador to the United States to refrain from escalating the situation in response to sanctions that the U.S. had imposed against Russia. Flynn also falsely stated that he did not remember a follow-up conversation in which the Russian ambassador stated that Russia had chosen to moderate its response to those sanctions as a result of Flynn's request.
The Lawfare Podcast is produced in cooperation with the Brookings Institution. Thanks this week to all the people who took time to record Robert Mueller's words. A special word of thanks to Matt Kahn and Michaela Fogel, who worked with me not just to record this all and put it all together, but to create a script out of these incredible documents that Mueller has produced. You, of course, need to do your part to promote the Lawfare Podcast, share the Lawfare Podcast, rate the Lawfare Podcast, and as always, thanks for listening.